Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. Tonight, I'm already disturbed. Please come in. We all get sick sometimes, but have you ever felt ill without explanation? Without any obvious reason? Without symptoms you could describe adequately to friends, family, your partner? Certainly not to doctors, especially doctors. And when you try, do they scratch their heads, order tests, couldn't find anything wrong? Said everything checks out fine, but you knew something wasn't right. Still, they scratch their heads, leaving you to think, maybe I'm crazy. My guest tonight says odds are increasing that more of us will at some point have an illness, very hard to diagnose. She had one that baffled her doctors and frustrated her and her new love interest, nearly drove her away for almost 3 years before she finally figured it out. A writer and poet, she began chronicling her ordeal while she was ill, mostly through Facebook posts and screenshots because that was often all she had enough energy for. She pulled them into a book she's written about her experience, about how we're different people when we're ill than when we're well, about social media, the silos of the medical world, and our destruction of our planet. It's called I'm Already Disturbed, Please Come In: Parasites, Social Media, and Other Planetary Disturbances, a memoir of sorts. It's been described in part as an indictment of the Western medical establishment and of social media. Author Gabrielle Glancy is an award-winning poet and translator whose work has appeared in The New Yorker and the Paris Review, among other publications. She's also a top expert in getting high school students into college and is the author of The Art of the College Essay. Gabrielle Glancy, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Happy to be here.
So let's hear some of I'm Already Disturbed, Please Come In. This is early in the book. You're at a coffee shop with one of your clients, a high school student. Anything else that listeners should know before you read?
No, I think it's pretty self-explanatory. Are you all right? Tolly Beck said to me last night about 10 minutes into the session. In the middle of explaining the quadratic formula, I started feeling strange. Negative b plus or minus the square root of b squared minus 4ac all over 2a. I repeated like a mantra, as if the formula itself or the act of repeating it could keep me from passing out. You got to keep saying it over and over, I explained to her. Pretty soon it'll become second nature, and you can call it up any time you need to use it. When do you need to use it? She asked. The tingling had started in my arms, and I could feel my jaw tightening and my stomach beginning to get hard. I pointed to the formula. Suddenly the numbers and letters started running together, and it was all just a big blur. Are you okay? Tolly asked me again. Yeah, I feel a bit weird, though, I said. I'll tell you what, I'm going to run to the bathroom for a minute, and then I'm going to grab something to eat. I don't think I've eaten enough today. Tolly was polite but looked worried. I excused myself and made my way to the back of the cafe. Thank God Patrick, the manager of the Noe Valley Starbucks, mops the bathroom every hour on the hour, because at moments such as this, all I want to do is lie down on the floor. And so, work clothes and all, that's exactly what I did. This seemed to relieve the pressure in my stomach and bring the blood back to my head. I knew I had only a few minutes to save face. More than that, and Tolly would start to worry. If she started to worry, she'd tell her mom. Then her mom would start to worry, and that would be the end of me. Getting kids into Harvard is not that easy. At the very least, you need to be wide awake while you're doing it. I knew I needed to get myself together fast. And what would I tell Tolly? How would I explain what was happening to me? Thankfully, the feeling started to pass. Sounds became more distinct, my jaw loosened, and I was able to stand up and get my balance. Just as I was coming out of the restroom, Pam, Tolly's mom, was coming in. Hey, Pam, I said. How you doing? I'm good, she said. How are you? I was just getting myself a snack, I explained. Hypoglycemic, I lied. Oh, me too, Pam said. She seemed delighted. Came with the change. She winked at me. For the moment, I was in the clear.
That's Gabrielle Glancy reading from her new book, I'm Already Disturbed, Please Come In: Parasites, Social Media, and Other Planetary Disturbances, a memoir of sorts. It's a long title. How'd you come up with that?
I saw the sign somewhere. I can't now remember where I saw it, and I was in the midst of writing the book already, and I thought, oh my God, that's so perfect. I'm already disturbed. Please come in. It's a play on the hotel signs that say, please don't disturb.
Right.
So it's like, I'm already disturbed. Please come in. And I think it really resonated for me because it reflects the state, our vulnerability. We're already disturbed. We've already disturbed the planet, and similarly disturbed our intestinal flora to the point that we're much more susceptible to all kinds of strange illnesses. So it's like, you know, I'm already disturbed. Please come in.
So the scene that you just read, when you're in the Noe Valley Starbucks and have to go and lie down in the bathroom in the middle of this appointment with the high school students, how far along were you at this point in having this problem?
Well, it happened all the time. I mean, this was not, you know...
But, I mean, had this been going on for years already, or months or weeks? Or?
On and off, I was this severely sick for 2.5 years. And this particular scene could have happened the first month, the third month, the 10th month, because it was just what was going on. I couldn't get diagnosed. I couldn't get rid of it. And it was weakening me to such a point that... you know, this happened all the time.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of how I sustained myself.
And how long ago did you, you know, get better or figure it out?
I think it's been about 2.5 years since I've been better, maybe 3 years by now.
Okay.
I'm very grateful.
Yeah, I bet. So the book is a really interesting format as well. The chapters are mostly very short. I don't know if that's because you're a poet, but primarily. And many of them feature Facebook screenshots that you saved during your illness. So why the Facebook screenshots? What did it mean for you to save them?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think that I was so, you know, I'm a writer, so naturally I'm always in either in my mind, or I'm taking notes, or I'm writing in a journal, or I'm working on something. But during this period, I was so sick that I really couldn't write much. All I could do was, you know, I would peruse Facebook, and I would see something interesting and take a screenshot and put it in a folder. I had no idea what I was going to do with it or what these images even meant. It was like all I could do instead of really writing was to just kind of create this collage, but I didn't even know what I was doing.
But it's for some reason they just appealed to you or pulled you and you
yes.
I had to save that one.
Yes. I mean, the first one that I saved was the first one that's in the book, which is in 2011. That it was the earliest snowstorm the East Coast had ever experienced. It was in October. And I was really, really taken with the images. I collected like hundreds of images of this snowstorm, particularly of trees in full leaf, because they hadn't lost their leaves yet, down by the snow. And it was only later that I realized, you know, I'm... you know, fairly young. I was 50 when I got sick, you know, and really like in the prime of my life. And it was like those trees in full leaf that were taken down by the snow. And it's this freak accident, you know, of nature, but really it's climate change probably. So it's the same. Then I realized this, the thematic parallel with my own physical condition.
So, I remember that shot in the book of the snowstorm. Do you have an example for us of a Facebook screenshot that you added a commentary to it later after you got better, right?
Yes, yes. So there's this one which I can describe to you. It was a show in Milan of this this artist. It's an installation, but at the time I just saw it's these umbrellas hanging between two like urban buildings. It captured my fancy, and I took a screenshot. And then the sort of writing that comes around it says, "Before this strange thing happened, I had more energy than all three of you put together, I tell her, but I'm not convinced she believes me. A host of white umbrellas with light bulbs in them hovering between two buildings." And then it's the image from Facebook. It's from somebody's wall photos. And then at the end of it, it says, "I think that about describes it, except some of my lights are out."
Wow, okay. So you are apparently a Facebook user and have been for a while?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because as I say in this book, pretty much before this period, I had a lot of attitude about Facebook. I had like 53 friends, and I just thought anybody who used Facebook, it seemed very juvenile and high school to me. And I kind of got addicted to it in this period because it was one of the only ways I could be in touch with anybody, and started accumulating friends and realized that also that Facebook itself and social media, you know, how we have the expression, it went viral. So it's got this, the language of illness in it. and it has a kind of parasitic quality because, you know, even without your thinking about it, you find yourself looking at it. It has a profound effect. You know, there's all these studies that people who look at Facebook a lot are more depressed because they see everybody on vacation, you know, tan and happy and coupled and
right. Nobody posts the bad stuff,
yeah,
at least
exactly.
Not very often. If you do, then then you get removed from their feed.
Exactly.
Right?
So I began to see that this thing that I was doing because I really couldn't do anything else actually had in itself some parallels to the thematic qualities that I was working on.
Uh-huh.
A kind of parasitic, viral nature of social media.
So, but what do you think of it now? Because in a way it was useful for you, at least during that time. Yeah, or not?
I still do it, you know, and there's a little passage in the book where I speak to my friend Erin, and she says, why do you think dogs pee on the trees? You know, and then the other dogs come by and smell it, and they're reading all the news of the day. That's how it happens. We all do it. Don't feel bad about it.
Right.
And I think it's become just such a, you know, I can see from working with my students and their parents and my friends, it's such a integral part of most people's lives. I mean,
right.
It's just what you do.
Especially here in the Bay Area.
Yeah, I would imagine everywhere, but
I like to call it Fakebook. Yeah, we're on Fakebook. We have a page on Out in the Bay, a Fakebook page. I mean, our Fakebook page you can find us on Fakebook. It's out in the Bay.
Right.
Anyway, you describe a doctor making you wait for over an hour at one of your appointments, and you finally kind of, I wouldn't say burst in, but you went into her office, and there she was on Facebook.
Yes.
While you were waiting for her.
I waited for an hour and 37 minutes. I was trying to stop from passing out. I was eating my almonds, which I carried everywhere, and salt water to keep my blood pressure up. And, of course, I still didn't know what was wrong with me. I was just treating the passing out symptoms. So I was doing isometrics to keep my blood pressure up and drinking salt water. And finally, you know, I was reading the pamphlets on duodenal ulcers and GERD and all kinds of things, and went to the receptionist. She said, yes, she's in. And finally, I went to the office. I saw her name on the office, and I poked my head in, you know, and I said, you know, are you almost ready? And I saw, she said, just a minute. And then I couldn't believe my eyes. She was on Facebook.
Do you think she was researching something?
No, I'm sure she was just looking, you know, what her friends are doing or whatever. And she still made me wait. She's like, you know, excuse me, just a minute, I'm busy. But I actually saw what she was doing.
And did you confront her on that? Or?
I didn't, but, you know, I wrote about it.
And, you know, this is an indictment in a sense of the Western medical establishment. You happen to be with Kaiser, which definitely gets picked on in this book, but it's not specifically anti-Kaiser, is it?
No. Actually, I think Kaiser's pretty wonderful. But, you know, I think Western medicine in general is so limited that, you know, I think it's just sort of the same all the way around, how doctors are trained, and they really have tunnel vision. And, you know, the other thing is, I did say to people very often, I felt like something was eating me, you know. But I think because I'm a writer and have a pretty vivid way of speaking, you know, so I would say things like, I don't know, like I have energy, but then it gets taken away. I think there's like an alien something that's taking my energy away. And, you know, it was so vivid, my descriptions, that I think the doctors just thought I was completely bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
They looked at me like they cocked their heads and they were like, uh-huh, right. So there's an alien creature possessing you. But there was an alien creature possessing me.
So how did you finally figure it out? After all these years?
Well, I got, you know, I went to a lot of, I even went to a lot of alternative, you know, medical experts. And finally, I went to this guy, Chris Kresser. Thank you, Chris. He's really, really well known now. He was just kind of coming into popularity when I met him. And he did a very exhaustive medical history of me. I wrote 10 pages of medical history. I walked into his office. I said, I think I'm dying. I'm really, really sick. I don't know what's wrong with me. It's been going on for years. And he said, have you had a stool test? And I said, no. And he said, I think you have parasites. And I was like, really? And we did a very sensitive stool test to pick up whatever there might be. It took like 3 weeks for it to come back. And I had raging parasites. I had two different parasites. But the one that was really bad was I had Strongyloides, which is a lethal, potentially lethal parasite. It, you know, it eats all your food, and then in return, it poops out toxins, like, you know, I don't know what it is, like cyanide-like toxins that can kill you.
Wow.
So, you know, besides the fact that I wasn't getting the nutrients I needed from my food, I was hungry all the time. In addition to that, it was secreting something that was making me very, very sick. I really, my jaw would lock. I mean, sort of tetanus-like symptoms, and my stomach would blow up, and I would lose consciousness.
And somehow you managed to keep counseling these students, because you said, I mean, you just said in that scene that you read earlier about the, you know, I couldn't let Pam know, the mother know, because then it would be all over.
Yeah.
That'd be the end.
Yeah.
I mean, what was your fear, that you would, all your clients would dry up?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they all knew each other. Was it a lot of word of mouth business for you?
Partly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, partly it's word of mouth. At this point, I'm working with students all over the world, but yeah, partly it's word of mouth, but it's just, you know, I didn't want to let on that I was barely capable of doing my job. I mean, I did well. I was successful, but maybe not as successful as at other years. But
and you're getting kids into Harvard, Stanford, all the top schools.
All
and
the
so
top
there's a lot
schools
of pressure,
in the country.
I imagine.
Oh my God, a lot of pressure. And I'm a single mom, so I was, you know, at that point I met my partner. At the time.
Yeah, now I wanted to describe about that, because you in the book you talk about meeting somebody and, you know, not wanting to hide your sickness, and her parents had died, so she got all freaked out. She didn't want to lose somebody else. And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that was just a very intense thing. I think I met her, her name in the book is Satya. I met her about a week after I had been in the emergency room for the first time. And I couldn't explain to her even what was wrong. You know, I was so surprised by it. You know, I said, I don't know. I just have this thing suddenly. I don't know what's going on. She stayed with me. I mean, we were together, you know, she stayed with me, but it was hard going. And she was very nervous about it. And often, you know, once I got better, I would say to her, you know, what made you stay with me? You know, I was sick so much of the time. But she did.
And you have a section you're going to read about her climbing the stairs at her house to go see some lake. And I love this little line in here, passing out is not very romantic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm going to read this small section of that comes sort of in the middle of the book about starting up this love affair in the middle of this very, very serious illness. While all this was going on, I was falling in love, albeit in a way I didn't recognize. Is this love or isn't it? Am I awake or am I asleep? How are you supposed to know anything when your being state is coming and going like clouds in the sky? Satya had been trying to get me to go to this secret pool since we met. Indeed, it sounded magical, but I wasn't sure I could make it. Finally, unable to resist her entreaties any longer, I agreed to go. Breathlessly, I climbed the 11 stairs to her door. Usually when I came to visit, I tried to tiptoe so she wouldn't hear me, because I needed a moment to recover before I knocked. In fact, I usually rested 2 or 3 times on the way up. This particular day, Satya was waiting for me at the top. She looked ravishing. Her hair was swept to one side, her green eyes were clear and sparkling, and she had on my favorite low-cut shirt. Wow, I said, wowee. I was too embarrassed to do what I usually did, so I took all 11 stairs without stopping. When I got to the top, winded and starting to feel strange, she kissed me like never before, pulled me through the doorway, and took me right there in the foyer, standing up. I was amazed and disoriented and losing consciousness all at once. I was swept up into the moment, and much as I tried to hold on, little by little, I was losing ground. Finally, in the heat of passion, my body froze. Just as it always happened, my stomach blew up, my jaw locked, and my mind said toodaloo. Through a blank curtain of numbness, I managed to say, uh-oh. What, honey, she said, what is it? Salt, I said. Satya ran into the kitchen to get it. I kept a stash of Himalayan sea salt wherever I might need it. I could hear the spoon clinking against the glass. As early as it was in our relationship, she knew exactly what to do. "'I'm so sorry,' I said. "'Passing out is not very romantic. "'Don't worry,' she said, but I could see she was worried. "'We stopped 100 times on our way up the mountain and down. "'Satya held my bag of almonds and my water bottle "'because it was too much for me to carry them. Please, she said, let's turn back. We've already gone halfway, I answered. At this point, it's the same distance back as forward. Let's press on. And so we did, through redwood trees on dusty, half-worn trails, the dry smell of sage and pine in the air, in what seemed like an endless journey to paradise. There it was, a beautiful, clear, rectangular pool, turquoise blue, overlooked by nothing, surrounded by a wood fence and perched on a hillside of swaying trees. It was every bit as beautiful as Satya had described, and there was no one else there. Satya took off her clothes. In an instant, she was in the water. When she came up, she was beaming. Her green eyes glistened. Come, she said. You swim. It's going to take me a minute to recover. I watched her naked breaststroke, her body lithe in the water, her head cutting through it like a prayer. I looked around at the trees in the wind, the blue sky behind them, felt the crisp air, the air crisp and clear, the sun on my face. I could fall for this girl, I thought. I'm really in trouble now.
That's Gabrielle Glancy reading from I'm Already Disturbed, Please Come In, Parasites, Social Media, and Other Planetary Disturbances. You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. And I want to just take a quick moment to thank Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Portola Valley, proud Out in the Bay supporters who hope their generous donation inspires others. It's easy on our website, outinthebay.org. Gabrielle, first of all, the book is, you can learn more about her and her book on her website, GabrielleGlancy.com. That's G with a G, not mm-hmm. Clancy with a G. She wanted to be very specific about that. Let's talk at least briefly about your work in college admissions. I'm curious to know, for example, how being queer, LGBT, any of those things these days, and stating that in a college admissions essay, does that help students these days? Does that like show, hey, this kid knows him or herself and has, you know, is on the way already to knowing who they are, whereas, you know, maybe 10, 20 years ago, it would not, something you would never do.
Right. Well, one thing I would say is it's rare. It's still rare. I mean, I take about 70 students across the finish line every year, and if I have one or two who already know they're gay and want to speak about it, that would be a lot, and this is the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty rare. I mean, I've had transgendered students on occasion, and, you know, they've wanted to write about it, and I've encouraged them to, because I think that's very much integral to their identity. And, you know, I certainly don't, when I work with students, I don't say, oh, write about that because, you know, whether you care about it or not, it's good for admissions. I'm really like a kind of follow your bliss kind of gal. So I really encourage them to write about what's most important. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, if a student comes out in high school, I mean, I had a student who was very close friends with Sasha Feinstein, whatever it is, who was a transgendered student who's skirt was set on fire on a bus, and she wrote about him.
Wow! Because they knew that they were a friend, and they wanted to talk about that because it affected them so much personally.
Yes, you know, and occasionally I do have you know, queer students who want to write about that, and they do, and sometimes it's incidental in what they're writing about, and sometimes it's central.
Mm-hmm. I hear that parents are writing essays these days for their kids to get into kindergarten or preschool. Is that true?
Well, it's very interesting. Admissions, I had, you know, when I was raising my sons and they were going into kindergarten, I gave advice, you know, I advised our family about what we should do. And I was very vehement that we only apply to three schools. This is ridiculous. This is kindergarten, you know, even though I work in, you know, college admissions. And then it turned out that we were on the waiting list for one of them. We got rejected from one of them. And the other one admitted us with no financial assistance, so we couldn't go there. And Satya said to me, oh my God, why did we only apply to three schools? You know, you're in admissions. Why didn't we? And I just thought, for kindergarten, this is ridiculous. We can't, you know, I'm not going to buy into this, you know, frenzy. But in fact, you know, certainly with the students I work with, college admissions, I have them cast their net wide and apply to 12 to 15 schools because it's crazy. It's a jungle out there.
Mm. I want to go back just briefly to the book, because What do you want people to get out of this? I'm already disturbed. Please come in. And towards the end, you do a lot of talking about Michael Pollan, and there's several quotes from him. Is it sort of like trying to get people aware of what we're doing to the planet? And
yeah, it's a wake-up call is the way that I think of it. You know, the last, the idea that the story of my accident is ours, you know, which comes at the end of the book, the story of my accident is ours, which is just that. And everyone I speak to, everyone who reads the book, or if people ask me, you know, what is this book about, everyone has a story. They're like, oh, yes, I was suffering from undiagnosed Lyme disease for years, you know, just all kinds of things, Epstein-Barr and chronic fatigue and Crohn's disease and all kinds of autoimmune diseases that are hard to diagnose. And so everybody has a story about it. It's very universal. And, of course, these sort of epidemics that are, you know, these like Ebola and things like that, that are just out of control. We don't even know. They're morphing and mutating, and the flus that are around these days, same thing. So I think there's a desire to both expose what I experienced in the medical system, which, you know, I grew close to some of the doctors. I had to fire my GP, who I absolutely loved, because he thought I was crazy. He's like, basically said, there's nothing wrong with you. I think you have anxiety. And I said, well, I have anxiety now because I don't know what's wrong with me, but there's something wrong with me, you know? And there was something wrong with me. So I think it's not just an indictment. It's a call to action. That, you know, we listen to people, and, you know, that doctors say, you know, what do you think is wrong with you? Because patients, really, people know, in a way. They may say it like I did, which was, I don't know, something's eating me, something alien is coming into my system. But if you listen to that, you don't even have to listen that closely to hear, oh, wow, maybe she has parasites. Mm-hmm. But nobody listened. They just were not even interested in what I had to say about my own body and my own health.
Gabrielle Glancy, thank you so much for coming in. You've been listening to Out in the Bay. My guest is Gabrielle Glancy, author of I'm Already Disturbed, Please Come In, Parasites, Social Media, and Other Planetary Disturbances, also the author of The Art of the College Essay. You can learn more about Gabrielle, her books, and her other work at her website, Gabrielle Glancy. And her professional website for college admissions stuff is newvisionlearning.org. We've got a little music just ahead from the amazing Home Street Home rock musical about homeless youth. It's a very powerful show. Stick around. First, I want to let you know we are so close to pinning down the date for our Out in the Bay 10th anniversary celebration. Maybe by the time this airs Thursday night, we'll know, and you'll be able to find all the details on our website, outinthebay.com, because we'd love to meet as many of our listeners there as we can. So please go to outinthebay.com. Subscribe to our email news, and we will send out the party details as soon as we have them, and we'll also post on our Facebook page and our website. That's outinthebay.com. Just hit the subscribe tab near the top of the page. We'll send you 10th anniversary details and occasional emails about special shows and events, sometimes ticket giveaways, but I promise we won't overload your inbox. We don't have time to write those emails. Anyway, if you can help us put on this party, we'd love a hand. If you're interested, please email me, eric@outinthebay.com. Out in the Bay is produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We thank KALW for studio use and airtime. As an independent production, though, we get no financial help from KLW nor from NPR. We rely on community support. Please join our friends Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Portola Valley, Terry Johnson of San Francisco. It's tax deductible because we're nonprofit. We'll thank you on the air only if you say it's okay. Thanks so very much. Instead of our usual theme music tonight, we're going to go out with a bit of music from Home Street Home. It's a rock musical about homelessness, homeless youth specifically, many of whom had to leave home because they're queer, gay, lesbian, trans, somehow different than what their parents wanted them to be. Home Street Home is really well crafted. It's created by Fat Mike of punk rock group NoFX, Dominatrix Goddess Soma, both of San Francisco, and Avenue Q co-creator Jeff Katz. It's got plenty of laughs, a fair share of tears, great music, gets at some very tough topics that many people would rather not think about. Among the critics, there's talk about Broadway. Hope it gets that far because it can shed some light on some serious issues it seems our society would rather not deal with. I don't have time for a review here, but in my humble opinion, if you can manage to get tickets to one of the last few performances this Friday and Saturday night at 9 p.m. Saturday matinee, go. They hold some tickets aside for day of rush sales an hour before the performances at Z-Space in San Francisco. Info at homestreethomeonstage.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening to Out in the Bay. Now here's Monsters from Home Street Home to take us out. It's sung by the 16-year-old homeless character whose father abused her repeatedly.
These nightmares aren't nightmares, and I can't reveal. The monster I see every night is very real. When I hear that demon voice,